Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kind of Funny Games Daily for Wednesday, June 15th, 2022. I'm your host, Blessing Adioye Jr. Joining me is my denim jacket bro, Gamonesis, aka Janet Garcia.
Yo, what's good?
How's it going, Janet?
It's going. I'm not going to lie. I am still recovering from the wedding that my brother and his now wife had on Sunday, which seems like it was a long time ago, but hey. Yay, congrats to them. They listened to the show. Well, Edwin at least listens to the show, so congratulations, Edwin. How's being married, even though I talk to you every day? But yeah, it was good. It went pretty smooth. Just a lot of little like last second errands and things at the end, and then a bit after and stuff. And, you know, it's a long amount of time. And
did you get to catch up with all the Summer Game Fest stuff, all the announcements?
All is too strong, I think. I did actually watch Summer Game Fest, the main show. Like, I watched that with my brother because we weren't doing anything really that day. It was, I think, Friday or something. So we were just kind of like hanging out. So I watched that straight up. I watched some of Day of the Devs. And then for Xbox, I kind of just like saw, like, just I caught the very, very end. Mm. I turned it on. Like, I got my hair and makeup done. Then I went down back to Edwin's suite and I turned on the TV, or I looked at the TV and then Kojima was there. I was like, this is crazy.
Like, oh shit. Oh,
Kojima's here. And then they're like, and one more thing. And then it was like it felt like 12 minutes of like staring into space. And then I was like, okay, what are the streets saying? I feel like the streets have been kind of quiet, to be honest. Which I think
on like Summer Game Fest as a whole, or Xbox specifically?
On Summer Game Fest as a whole. The streets were lukewarm. Like I did not feel as much foam. Obviously I wanted to go to like Keeley's, you know, hands-on event thing. Like, that was the big thing that I was, yeah, the what is it called?
Play days.
Okay, isn't that what PlayStation calls their like sales or something? It sounds very familiar.
That sounds actually kind of similar. I think it's summer play days.
Play days. Don't get that confused with Summer Game Fest play days.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never thought play days.
That actually lines up, because like every time I'll talk to somebody about Summer Game Fest play days, like I was like, has this been going on for a while? I feel like I've said this before. So that actually kind of
Yeah, that's what that is. So obviously that would have been like the big cool thing for me as like a creator and like a, you know, critic. But yeah, having not gotten to watch this stuff, I felt like I didn't miss that much. Okay, PlayStation Days of Play.
Days of Play, that's what
way
it is.
Different than Play Days.
Way different than Summer Play Days. Days of Play,
the play date, and then Days of, and then Play Days.
Totally I will different. Say, yeah. when I was in LA, there were times where I was like, man, I wish Janet was here, because you were gone doing the wedding and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I was at one of the mixers, and I met Sarah from MinMax, and she was like, oh, yeah, I know Janet. Like, I co-host with Janet. And me and her had this, like connection, like, bonding moment of us being like, Janet's the worst, right? She's always yelling at us. And she's like,
you both have to be under the iron fist.
It was like meeting somebody who's been, like, hurt by the same person, and you're, like, sharing this trauma.
I love that, like, all the stories that I've heard, because I listen to a bunch of different podcasts of, like, all these people getting to like finally meet each other who only really knew each other over the internet. And they're all like, oh yeah, like, oh, isn't this person the best? Oh, we love this person. And then this story is, oh, Janet's the worst, right?
That was like legitimately the first sentence we said to each other. Like, after she told me, she was like, yeah, I podcast with Janet. And I was like, Janet's the worst, right? She's like, yeah, do you like, because we both like, here's what I realized,
Sonic, right?
Yeah, we both like Sonic. And Sarah seems like she's just me at MinMax. That is the vibes I got. It seems like, in terms of taste and in terms of back and forth that she has with you,
but like
it sounds
more
like she's
horse girl vibes, you know.
Sure,
you
know? Yeah.
You got to step your horse game up.
Yeah,
Wes.
You
got to
step your
on?
Horse game up.
Is she a horse girl? Is that for real?
You know, it's hard to know where the meme ends and where Przorski begins, if I'm being honest.
Przorski.
Yeah, Sarah Przorski. Yeah. Yeah, I think she likes them all right. Like, she played a lot of horses, but that was her big thing. She like went through like, I don't know, six different horse girl games, and the community kept voting for it, and all she did was play horse girl games forever, which, you know, there's horses out here that y'all could have hit up if you were interested. I saw everyone my big takeaway from, like, the more social part of Key 3 was everyone fucking loves taking a picture with that Batman statue. Did you also take a picture with that Batman statue?
I didn't see the Batman statue.
Yeah, man, like, everyone hit up that statue. I was like, it's not that deep. I see that statue.
I don't know.
All the
time. I was pretty jealous of that Batman statue.
I saw Timur taking a picture with it.
Yeah. Timur, like, Lucy. I'm guessing they were all just there at the same time. But I was like, man, the chokehold this Batman statue has on y'all. It's funny because it's like commissioned by
James Gordon.
Like Burbank about like Burbank for like tourism, and I'm like, it's working. They knew like how to get the asses in the seats, I guess.
Yeah, bring me like an Avengers statue here in SF. Give me more of that.
Yeah, uh-huh.
I just like, because I know like
Batman
I would
statue.
I know if they had like if I was down there, bless, and some more had even made mention of a Batman statue, like I would have gone with them. You know, I would have taken the same picture.
Janet, Barrett, enough about this goddamn Batman statue. We got a whole lot to talk about, like Fallout 5 being next after Elder Scrolls 6. Who would have thought? I've been playing some Neon White, and it's one of the best indie games of the year. And more, because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindafunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindafunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily. Remember, you can use Epic Creator Code Kinda Funny on all Epic Store and Epic in-game purchases like Rocket League and Fortnite to help support the channel. To be a part of the show, to patreon.com/kindafunnygames, or bronze members or above, get to write in. And silver members or above, get the show ad-free with the exclusive daily post show. Housekeeping for you, a new episode of the Kinda Funny Gamescast is live, wrapping up our time at Summer Game Fest Playdays. Summer Game Fest Playdate. Playing Sonic Frontiers, Cuphead DLC, and more. You can catch that right now on youtube.com/kindafunnygames and podcast services around the globe. And then remember that Xbox and Bethesda Extended Showcase went down yesterday. If you're wondering where our impressions of that are, have no fear. Kinda Funny Xcast will be breaking that down in their episode this week, so look out for that in the regular location. The Kinda Funny TikTok has a ton of previews from Summer Game Fest, including Street Fighter 6, Cuphead, Sonic, and more. Remember, you can follow that at Kinda Funny Games on TikTok. Remember, we've got our Quarry spoiler cast up right now. If you've been playing Quarry, if you finished the Quarry, and you want to see how our stories finalized, which characters lived, which characters died, and me, Greg, Joey, and Mike's stories, you can check that out. YouTube.com/KindaFunnyGames and podcast services around the globe. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Gordon McGuire and Fargo Brady. Today, we're brought to you by Shopify and Athletic Greens, but we'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Europa Report. It's time for some news. We have six stories today.
A baker's dozen.
Starting with our number one, Todd Howard said the words Fallout 5. Janet Garcia, he did it. We're here. We've made it. Fallout 5 are words that came out of Todd Howard's mouth. This is from Joe Screbbles at IGN. The full story really is that Todd Howard sat down with IGN, did a full interview, and he has a lot to say about Fallout 5. He has a lot to say about Starfield and the future of Bethesda Game Studio. In conversation with Ryan McCaffrey, Howard followed up on a number of elements we learned the first time during Starfield's gameplay reveal at the Xbox and Bethesda showcase last weekend. Here's a quick rundown of everything new we learned. Todd Howard has confirmed to IGN that Fallout 5 will be Bethesda Game Studios' next game after The Elder Scrolls 6, which itself will follow on from 2023's Starfield. Quote, "Yes, Elder Scrolls 6 is in pre-production," he said. Quote, "And, you know, we're going to be doing Fallout 5 after that, so our slate's pretty full going forward for a while. We have some other projects that we look at from time to time as well," end quote. Amid a huge amount of new information on Starfield from the Xbox Bethesda Showcase, likely the most discussed detail was Todd Howard's announcement that the upcoming sci-fi RPG will include 1,000 fully explorable planets. Howard told us more about the game's approach to procedural generation, what it offers, and assured us that players can ignore them in favor of a huge amount of fully handcrafted content if they want to. I do want to shout out, if you go to the IGN story, for each of the tidbits that they're sharing, they have like a link for each of them where they go into detail more about what Todd Howard has to say about the 1,000 fully explorable planets. Apparently, this game is going to have way more handcrafted content than any other Bethesda game previously. And so go give IGN the clicks, read through the article, and see what stuff pulls you in if you want to read more about it. But to continue the base article, Starfield's main quest is about 20% bigger than previous Bethesda games such as Skyrim and Fallout 4, with Todd Howard saying that means it should take around 30 to 40 hours to complete, without stepping away to do side content. Howard said the game's main story is longer than normal due to the sheer number of quests. Starfield will have four major cities for players to explore, including New Atlantis, which is the biggest that developer Bethesda has ever made. Howard said that New Atlantis, capital city of the United Colonies, is not just the biggest in this game, but bigger than anything Skyrim, Fallout 4, or any of the developer's previous games. Quote, it has all the services you would expect, and you can work on your ship there. The factions touch that, Howard said. But that's also the headquarters for Constellation, which is the faction that you join that is the last group of space explorers. Kind of this NASA meets Indiana Jones meets the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen group, end quote. Todd Howard said that Starfield won't allow you to fly seamlessly from space to its 1,000 explorable planets, saying the feature is, quote, really just not that important to the player, end quote, to justify the engineering work involved. Todd Howard said Starfield features a unique take on space combat, and that was partly inspired by FTL and MechWarrior. And yes, you can steal ships that you board. One other tidbit I'll add in there too, right, talking about the procedural generation stuff. And one of the other articles that IGN put out there, Todd Howard talked about how pretty much every big Bethesda RPG has some level of procedural generation in the development of the game's world. And like it seems like it's not as big of a deal as people put out there in terms of it not feeling like a actual handcrafted thing. It seems like that's more so environment generation more than anything. But with 1,000 planets, you imagine you're going to get a little bit more procedural generation than previous Bethesda stuff. But Janet Garcia, firstly, do you have any interest in Starfield? Is that your kind of game?
It's not really my kind of game necessarily, but I do have interest in it. Like, I'm definitely going to play it when it comes out. And by that, I mean, I just don't have as deep of a history with games of this genre that I have with, like, other genres, like, you know, action adventure or, like, platformer or whatever. Like, it's more of a handful than, like, a lot of depth. And it's rare for me to finish them. Like, I started Outer Worlds, and I liked it. I enjoyed it a lot. I just didn't finish it. You know, Fallout 4, you know, I'm playing it a bit, but I haven't finished it. I don't know if I'll finish it, but I'm having fun playing it. With this one, it's interesting. Obviously, I mean, the No Man's Sky comparisons make themselves only because of, like, the space element and the travel and the amount of stuff. Like, the way there's been an emphasis on volume, and you can argue that part of that is on, you know, the audience who, like, people always say, like, oh, I'm tired of hearing about how big the game is. But that's the number one question that everyone wants to ask. And people are like, I'm tired of, like, this being, like, the big report takeaway. It's what people are interested in knowing. Like, people want to know how. I used to ask that question all the time, like, whenever it's a game of any, where scope is of emphasis at all. Like, yeah, like, you always ask that, and people always want to hear that it's a little bit bigger. Just because that's, I don't know, the nature of how people tend to be.
It's the thing where many people play video games in many different ways, where I'm of two minds with it. First mind being that if I read this at when I was in high school or when I was in college or when I had way more time to play video games, I would read this and go, fuck yes, like 1,000 planets is longer than any other Bethesda game studio RPG prior. Hell yes, I'm gonna play this game forever. And I think that's probably the bulk of people that are looking forward to a big Bethesda game, right? Like, most people don't play video games like you and I, Janet, where we're playing so many things to, like, have talks about end of the year stuff, right? Or be able to review games throughout the year. And even a lot of our audience, who I'm sure play more game than the average game player, like, we're the outlier. Most people, I think, look at length, look at 1,000 planets, look at 60 hours and go, ah, fuck yeah, dude, that sounds awesome. Let me give my whole life to this game. That's my first mind of it. The second mind of it is the handcrafted talk, right? Like, when you talk about 1,000 planets, how much of that content is going to matter? How much of that content is going to feel, you know, truly exciting, right? Am I going to find unique discoverable stuff? Am I going to find quests? Is it just going to be me going to whatever planet to mine whatever resources to bring back and build my ship and build my settlement? And, you know, I get scared and fearful about the, oh man, we're pushing the limits in terms of what all these planets are going to be. But, you know, I do think that if that then rolls back into a gameplay loop that is, hey, this planet is cool because it has this specific resource that, like, once you discover it, you're gonna go crazy because you're dying for this resource, right? Whatever made-up resource that goes on in the solar system that they're gonna talk about. Like, you get there and you're like, oh, I've been looking for this planet forever, let's fucking go. I do think that stuff can be exciting, but I think it is different from Bethesda games previous, which is where I understand a lot of the apprehension that comes with that.
I think, too, the apprehension is, like, tied to the most recent, like, iterations of the catalog, which haven't, you know, blown people away necessarily. So this is definitely like, there's a lot of pressure. I mean, I think there's always a lot of pressure, but I think right now there's definitely, I think the good news is people are excited about this game and interested by this game. And it sounds like, it sounds good. The pitch sounds solid. I think the apprehension comes in with the level of ambition, the, you know, it's always different to like hear it versus play it. It's like, okay, these 1000 planets, it's like, what, how is this utilized and how is it going to fit for all these different kinds of play styles? Like you mentioned, everyone comes to games for different things. Like I mentioned, like in Fallout 4, I was really into like making my little like town, the base building stuff. And then you were like, oh, I like didn't do, I think you said you like didn't do that at all. Or like, I think Greg as well. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I was super into it. So it could be, you know, a matter of taste. And then it's about like, it's so difficult with games like this, you know, you're trying to offer a certain amount of things that can kind of let people go in the directions that they feel compelled to go in, while also making the base experience of the, hey, if we all roll credits on this game, we all kind of have these same core takeaways, and that it's a good and enjoyable takeaway. So, you know, we'll just see what happens if, I don't know if they can stick a landing on this. I do think in a way, you know, bringing it back to like the kind of angled headline of Fallout 5 being after like Elder Scrolls, I like that Fallout 5 is so far away. But if I want to know what's going on in Crop, that's where I look. But I think that I like that because I feel like that gives more space for experimentation and learning to really try to, before trying to really, I don't want to say bring back the Fallout brand because now it gets destroyed, but you know, 76 didn't hit for a lot of people. And I think they have, I think it's wise to be careful with returning to that franchise.
See, where I come down is, I like them talking about Fallout 5, I think is humorous, but also like it's common sense, right? Like their next game is Elder Scrolls 6. Of course, they're going to come back to Fallout 5. Them saying the words Fallout 5 and actually putting the announcement out there.
In the year 2022
is funny just because, you know, you're talking about Bethesda's history as a studio. You're talking about Fallout 4 coming out in 2015, Fallout 76 coming out in 2018, and then Starfield seemingly coming out in 2023, right? In this article, right, Todd Howard talks about Elder Scrolls 6 being in pre-production. I think we're looking forward to Elder Scrolls 6 coming out in what, 2028, 2029? You know, it took 7 years for Starfield seemingly. Like, that's about what we're looking for Elder Scrolls 6, which means that Fallout 5, we're looking at what, 2035, 2036 for that game?
Will I have beaten Fallout 4 by the time Fallout 5?
I will be...
Absolutely not. You will have not beaten it by then.
I will be in my 40s by the time I play Fallout 5. And here's the thing.
I don't think you're being... How old are you now? No, you're younger than me.
I'm 27.
No, you don't be in your 40s. You'll be like mid to late 30s.
No, I will be in my...
13 years from now, I could see it being 13 years. And Blessing and I are both 40.
You're going to be in your 40s.
I will be in my 40s by the time I play Fallout 5.
Janet, I bet you right now a pizza bet... In 13 years, when Blessing and I are 40.
What kind of pizza? It's not from LA, is it? Because all our pizza's really bad.
No, we'll get you something good. We'll get you something good.
Here's what I'll say, though.
Sure. I'm going to say Blessing's going to be, he's not 40 when he's playing this game.
I'm in my 40s.
Sure. Yes. You're not in your 40s.
Okay.
That's what I'm going to say. You're not in your 40s. All right.
I'll shake my hand on that. 10 or 13 years from now.
This way.
We're shaking. Yes. Video watchers can see it.
Honestly, it was actually a pretty good handshake. Also, really quick, I want to call out JigZ32 in the chat who said, to be fair, Janet doesn't finish most games. Maybe it's true that I don't finish most games compared to the percentage that I play, because I play like everything, at least a little bit.
Still on yourself,
But in 2020, I beat 28 games. Last year, I beat 50 games. This year, I've beat 19 games. So, I don't know.
Janet,
how many games have you beat,
Janet?
Still on yourself, Janet. Go off, Janet.
Can I beat more? We're gonna find out this year, but I think 50 games is like kind of a fuck ton of games to beat in a single year. So
let him know.
I wouldn't
say
that I don't finish any games, but we'll see if I finish Starfield. We'll see.
Going back, right? I think by the time I play Bethesda Game Studios Fallout 5, I will be in my 40s. I do not think it'll take that long for me to play another Fallout game. I think there will be another Fallout game before Fallout 5. I just think another studio will make it. Yeah, like
that's interesting. What do you think it would be, though?
Maybe Obsidian with Fallout New Vegas, maybe another developer.
That's also working on 3 games like right now as it is, right?
Yeah, but apparently they got a billion people working there because they just churn out games like crazy.
I don't see another Fallout game, but I feel like you've been kind of on a little bit of a hot streak with your fucking Queen's Gambit shit and stuff, so I'm kind of like,
I think because Fallout is such a strong IP, and I think as Bethesda and as Microsoft, you don't just sit and let a Fallout, let the Fallout IP just hang around for 15 years. Like, there's a lot of money to be made with the Fallout IP. I think you give that to another studio, whether
and,
it is
like mainline Fallout, because like I feel like a lot of people, like, there was an audience for Fallout 76, but like people are paying attention to the, you know, the 3, 4 and then 5, right? Like Fallout 4 came out in what, 2015?
Yeah.
And so like at that point, if we're guessing like at least 13 years from now, that'll be 20 years.
Yeah. No, and like
my math's not right on that one.
I mean, you're, by the time we get there,
no, it is. It is. Fuck you guys. I know math.
but Barrett said, "Fuck you guys," if anybody disagreed with him. I know. But also, yeah, you disagreed with yourself.
You got to get ahead of it. I understand.
But no, like I do think that that is a valuable IP. You don't just sit on that. In the same way that Starfield, if Starfield comes out and it's a hit, right, and it's Bethesda's biggest game yet, you're telling me that Starfield 2 is going to then wait until 2050 something? No, like, you know, I do think that you have to follow up on these things a bit quicker. And I do think that that'll end up being Bethesda giving that IP or like spreading out that IP in ways that make sense. I think you'll get side spinoffs of these games from other studios that are maybe comparable sized RPGs, like open world RPGs, or maybe smaller takes on them. I don't think you just sit on these RPGs and let them just hang out for a while, because that is then after a while, you then start to lose like the potential of it, right? Like Fallout becomes less exciting 20 years from now when they've not made any Fallout thing.
Yeah, sure.
That pregnant pause, hell yeah.
It was one of those things where I'm like, I'm good, but then like you like didn't do anything, and I'm like, I didn't want to hold it.
I thought we were doing the pregnant pause. I liked it.
I am never purposefully doing the pregnant pause. I'm just pausing.
I'm always purposely doing the pregnant pause.
Well, now I know. I didn't know this about you. Now I know for the future. I apologize.
Do you not listen to do you not listen to the PS Love Yous where me and Greg do the pregnant pauses and we're like, yeah, fucking got them.
What, the like two that I haven't been on? Which I heard the one with Taylor. Like, yeah, I've never heard you guys do it.
I swear to God, you've been on one of those. Like, you've been part of the pregnant pause before.
Maybe I have, but then I thought it was Greg's thing. You know, I thought you were maybe just like caught up in it. You know what I mean?
I'm trying to make it.
Now I know. Now I know. Yeah, I apologize.
Let's hop into story number two. TMNT Shredder's Revenge has the review embargo up. We got a review roundup for you. Right now on Metacritic, it is sitting at an 83. On OpenCritic, it is sitting at an 87. Mitchell Saltzman at IGN gave it an 8 out of 10 and says, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Shredder's Revenge is exactly what it looks like. A lovingly crafted reimagining of the TMNT arcade beat-em-ups from one of the best beat-em-up developers in the business today. It's the perfect game to have in the library for when a group of friends come over and you want to play something that's simple, fun, and can be comfortably finished in a single sitting. It does admittedly play it pretty safe with its level design, and as a result, there is some tedium that creeps in towards the tail end of the campaign or a single sitting arcade mode run. But these shortcomings are for the most part smoothed over thanks to fun combat, a charming and nostalgic pixel aesthetic, and one of the best soundtracks of the year so far. And then Nicole Carpenter at Polygon says Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Shredder's Revenge absolutely rules. With Shredder's Revenge, developer Tribute Games has achieved exactly what a lot of nostalgia-based remakes have failed to do before. It plays just like my memory tells me those brawlers played in my childhood, and it's delightful. There are two modes to bash your way through. The arcade mode is the classic experience, limited lives, no saves. The story mode is more generous with lives and lets you progress through the story on a pixelated top-down map, complete with side quests that reward points, which unlock new abilities for each character. Story progression and abilities are saved between play sessions, whereas each time you head into the arcade, you start over from square one. Mechanically, Shredder's Revenge is simple, but not without depth. You certainly can get by through button mashing. The main attack easily chains with itself for big damage, for instance. But there are a variety of simple combinations that round out each character. This game is so mechanically satisfying, so endearingly fun, that I couldn't wait to hop back in to familiar environments, which remind me so much of crouching around that TV as a kid all those years ago. Jan, do you have any excitement for TMNT Shredder's Revenge?
Yes and no. Like, I love beat 'em ups, so I'm definitely gonna play this. And I'm looking forward to playing it. But the reason I don't say I necessarily have excitement for it is because it is a little bit of a known quantity. I'm like, this is gonna be, well, again, unless I like messed it up, like a good / great brawler that I knew it was that when it first came out. So it just wasn't that ever that exciting to me. Like, seeing gameplay of it, I'm like, yep, it's the turtles. They're doing their thing, like, you know, like, yeah, like, I was excited though when I, you know, for the presentation when they had the release date. I'm like, okay, cool, like, you know, now we'll know when we can get our hands on it. But it's good to hear that, you know, people are into it. I like the sound of the additional, like, allowances for the story mode. I think that's pretty cool. And I am salty that I didn't get this for my fantasy critic. I woke up today frantically looking who got these last games that came out, because I feel like I'm starting to slip. So that's stressing me out. But I'm excited to play this. I'm probably going to play with my brother, so I feel like I have to wait to play it. We kind of have a lot on our plate still. And he's leaving for his mini moon soon. So, but yeah, I'll see when I get around to this for that reason.
Relating when you're talking about a fantasy critic, relating to the next story, I know, Blessing, that you're bringing up. So, like, with updates, right? So if we go up here with the standing, it's like, Janet, you're still in first. You still have like a good good lead here with Paris, who will be catching up with you because he was the one who picked up TMNT Shredder's Revenge. So he will actually, I think, whenever he gets his points actually allotted to him, he's going to have 48 points, depending
for
on
now.
If, like, like,
it'll drop dramatically, I think, over the days.
I mean, do you think a bunch of more reviews are going to come out for this game in the, like, the next couple of days, Bless?
I think enough will come out it'll bring the open critic down to, like, an 83 or 82.
Nah, I think the lowest it'll dip is 85.
Yeah, same.
Get absolute lowest, yeah.
And then Neon White, Bless, you have, which I think, let's see here.
Sitting pretty good.
Right now on open critic is that's our next thing. That's 88 on open critic right now.
So let me do
which
the
will also drop, I imagine.
Plus, what is that, 18 points? You guys are catching up. XCast as a team is still ahead. Again, assuming these points with Neon White and TMNT, they're at 116.5. And assuming you guys get the points right now for Neon White, you guys would be at 104.
Here's the thing. Like, we got in the bag for a PS to Love You, right? Like,
Last of Us Remake?
Scroll down to Janet's squad. Because Janet has a lot of points. But also a lot of Janet's games have released, right? So we're looking at, is that Janet? Janet got Sifu first?
Yep.
Good for you. But yeah, Janet has Sifu, right, which got her 10 points. She got Lego Skywalker Saga, which got her 12. Pokemon Legends, that got her 14. And then Ollie Ollie World, which got her 16.
She's also got Cult of the Lamb.
She's got Cult of the Lamb in there.
And
I think Mario's coming out.
Yeah, I don't think Mario's coming
out. Splatoon 3,
me over. Question mark.
It's coming out. It's got a date.
Like, you got a pretty good squad there. Okay. Scroll up to mine real quick. Actually, go back.
Hold on. So we're looking at yours. We've got Elden Ring.
So you got Elden Ring at 31 points, right? And then Kirby and the Forgotten Land brought me down by, like, what, 15 points, something like that.
Yeah.
And so right now I'm at 16. I'm not, like, high up on the list, but I have a lot of games that are about to come out. Like, that's the thing is, I only have one game that is officially out versus other people who have more games. But you look at my list, right? I got Last of Us Part One, Hollow Knight Silksong, which, you know, who knows if that's coming out this year, but it might come out this year. Like, you have no idea.
Counterpick Saints Row. Because I think they're going to lose some points on that, I feel like.
I forget who counterpicked Saints Row. Somebody did. But then...
We'll see. I'll look around. That was Mike counterpicked Saints Row.
But then, yeah, you got Neon White. DNF Duel is going to come out and it's going to get a lot of points. And then Xenoblade Chronicles 3 is going to get a lot of points. That is the thing. Is I play the long game. A lot of people has been expressing concern for me. And I'm like, guys, I've been saying this all year.
Yeah, but
I'm
Gary's got Stray.
Season.
Gary's got Stray.
Oh yeah,
Gary's
gonna get a strong 11 points. 11 points off Stray.
Don't worry,
that's
I'm gonna walk through. I'm gonna walk these old dads through on, like, how to actually log into this site so they can finally drop all the games.
Gary,
you gotta
stop playing sides, man. All right, listen. You also help out
again.
With
it doesn't matter who
side.
Wins because I win either way. I produce both shows. I'm on both teams. You know.
I feel like you shouldn't be helping them. I feel like
Paris
you got too much
is,
of the insiders.
I help you guys too. And, like, Paris has got all of these games are, like, not, like, coming out. So, I mean, none of you are old dads who don't know how to log into this website and don't know how to drop these games that have been delayed
for a
while.
Who's that on? That's on them, Barrett. That's on them. Mike should be teaching
them. Do you have a child, Bless? Okay?
Not yet.
They're busy.
You don't know that. I don't know if I have a child. But going back, right?
That's scary.
Yeah, that's scary. TMNT is one that I'm excited for, and I've been more excited about it as we've been working our way up to it. You know, there was the Raekwon and Ghostface Killah song that dropped for it, and that alone had me like, fuck, now I gotta play this game. This game seems like it's gonna be really awesome, and then I've talked to Tim a little bit about it, and Tim is over the moon on it. Tim absolutely loves it. The only thing is that right now, it is indie game season. Like I've been updating my Blessing Superfund game release calendar.
I need like a weather app that tells me what season it is based on Blessing's feelings of the industry.
It's indie game season technically starts tomorrow, all right? But I'm getting ahead of it. But yeah, if you look at the calendar, right, tomorrow you're getting Neon White, and then Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. A little bit later in the month, you're getting Sonic Origins, which is an indie, but like, you know, along with that, you're getting Capcom Fighting Collection, DNF Duel, and then Escape Academy coming June 28th, and then a couple days later, Cuphead's Delicious Last Course. And then going into next month, you are getting Arcadageddon, As Dusk Falls, Stray, Live a Live, and then you get back to like the Xenoblade Chronicles of the world and stuff like that. But like right now it is a busy time, and I'm trying to play a lot more Neon White because I'm absolutely adoring that game, which I can get into right now, right, going into the Neon White review roundup. Like I mentioned before, on Metacritic is sitting at an 88, on Open Critic it is also sitting at an 88. I think more reviews will start to pop as well as the day goes on, and as days go on that might bring it down a little bit, but it's sitting pretty high up there. I want to start off with Oisin Kunke at Eurogamer, who recommends it and says, to describe Neon White at its most basic, it's a speedrunning FPS where our protagonist, the titular White, is tasked with killing all the demons plaguing heaven before Judgment Day. But there's a strong dash of anime mixed in there too, with some fun, albeit simple, visual novel elements. To say that this game is fast is an understatement. Neon White is designed around you getting to the end of the level as fast as you can, giving you a variety of tools from level to level. These tools come in the form of soul cards, pickups that give you access to a range of firearms that can alternatively be spent for one-off supernatural powers. Take the rifle, for example. Use it as a quick weapon, and you've got a long-range, pretty powerful gun that can take down most enemies in a couple of shots. Or you can spend it to do a speedy dash across a gap, taking down any enemies along the way as you face through them. But that does put you down a gun. More than anything, the combination of the effective level design and clever movement mechanics taught me something special, the magic of speedrunning. I've dabbled in speedrunning in the past. The only games I've completed full runs of are the seminal Celeste and a personal favorite in Kingdom Hearts 2, but never taking it particularly seriously. God, does Neon White let you feel the rush of it? I think the moment that really solidified this as a game that I actually think I want to learn how to run came when I played its very first level. Not the first time I played it, but once I returned to it after a good few hours into the game. I wanted to know how fast I could beat it, how high I could place. And you know what? At the time of writing, I'm in the number one spot. From there, I want to hop into Blake Hester's review at Game Informer, who gave it a 9.5 out of 10 and says, it also helps that aesthetically, Neon White scratches specific and neglected itches. It's reminiscent of Japanese action games that don't really exist anymore, like Killer 7 and El Shaddai Ascension of the Metatron. It recalls anime like Trigun and Cowboy Bebop and music from now-defunct bands like Drop Dead, Gorgeous, and the Blood Brothers. It's heavenly yet a violent aesthetic is slick, striking, and full of attitude, like the t-shirt section of a Hot Topic and the anime aisle of a Suncoast video collided into each other.
Hell yeah.
Fuck yes. Neon White achieves everything it sets out to do with remarkable success. Not only is it one of the most entertaining experiences I've played in years, but it also speaks to a highly specific audience. Many just don't anymore. It's for weirdos, misfits, and dorks. Neon White is one of the best games of the year, and it'd be a colossal mistake to not check it out. And then Roger has been playing it. He's the reviewer for Kinda Funny. He gave it a 4 out of 5, calling it great. Barrett, are you able to... Oh, you already have it up. Go ahead and play that TikTok.
I have some technical
and that's what he had
here.
To say.
Give me a second. I think maybe Windows is outputting its sound to somewhere it shouldn't be. So we're going to look at that. We're going to go over here. Yes, it is, even though I said it last night to not do that. Give me a second here. We're even going to...
Barry, take your time.
We're
going to
refresh
time,
this page, and then
it's going to be all better.
It's going to be all better. All right, we're going to look over at Roger in just a second, and it's going to be great, and he's going to be fantastic in this review, like right now.
Neon White is great. Is. This is an FPS with a twist. It's built from the ground up for speedrunning. Get from one end of the level to the other using weapons, abilities, and your wits to muster the best time possible. But Neon White staggers its gameplay mechanics brilliantly as it slowly layers on new enemies and weapons, and it all culminates in levels that can only be described as controlled chaos. And it's absolutely absolutely exhilarating. While the gameplay is the star, the story is a good framework for the action. To be honest, the story wasn't my cup of tea, but I can see a lot of people really digging it. But generally speaking, this game is overflowing with style. Just look at this HUD. This is so unnecessary, but I love it. If you're remotely into games like Ghost Runner, Hotline Miami, or Katana Zero, you're going to love this game. So if any of that sounds interesting to you, buy it, because Neon White is great. This is an FPS.
Hell yeah. Yeah, so very good loop. And I've been playing Neon White as well. I didn't get to play as much of it, which is why I didn't review it, because I've been gone in LA. But like, while I've been in LA, I've been using this big, beautiful beast called the Steam Deck to play Neon White in my hotel room when I've had the time.
Stop it, Bless. I'm sick of hearing about this fucking
beautiful,
Steam Deck.
Sleek, very heavy to hold Steam Deck. And I've been having such a blast with it, right? Like, the first person action elements have been exactly what I've wanted it to be. Right now, Barrett's pulled up a really good meme that the Kind of Funny account tweeted yesterday of Greg Miller with the Steam Deck. Is like one of them capture deals. Is this a meme that's been popular? Because this is the first time
it's an AI algorithm thing that, like, if you give it any prompt, it'll just make images for you with that prompt. So these are the horrifying images that it made with given the prompt Greg Miller with the Steam Deck.
But yeah, like, the first person segments of the game are exactly what I wanted to be, right? Like, Roger references Ghost Runner and Hotline Miami, and it is that kind of game, which more and more is starting to become one of my favorite genres of game. Like, give me the quick levels where I'm going in, one hit kills or whatever. Even though this isn't one hit kills, but it's very fast paced in terms of it is kinetic. You're trying to get to the end of the level as fast as you can, and the game just keeps going, right? And the fun of the game is coming back and seeing how quickly you can complete these levels. The quicker you complete the levels, the higher the score you get, and you're trying to get the highest medal. And yeah, dude, it is everything that you've heard from these reviews in terms of stylistically what it's doing, right? Just looking at it, it reminds me, the comparison I've been making has been Paradise Killer in terms of visuals, which is a game that I really loved visually, where the characters are like these demonic, cartoony, anime style characters that, you know, like, exist in these environments that are just really vibrant to look at, right? It's like a lot of colors, a lot of like light colors, a lot of like really cool architecture. And yeah, like, out of Jana, is this one that you've been keeping an eye on? Like, are you interested in Neon White?
Yeah, I've been following this since like I first heard about it, which has to have been like at least 1 year ago, maybe more. It's so interesting coming from Ben Esposito, alongside what's the other device, Angel Matrix, because Ben Esposito's other game was Donut County, which is a very different game, which I love. Like, I think it's really rad that his body of work is that stark and in contrast. But yeah, because of that, I'm like, yeah, this looks, I'm interested in this because I enjoyed that game, even though they are highly different games. And I loved the shtick of this, like the idea of, even though it's funny because it sounds like something that I may wouldn't be into, because it's like gunplay and cards, and I historically haven't always loved both of those elements, but they can work for me. And I also like the style of this as well. So yeah, I've been looking forward to this for a really long time. This is definitely one that I would play kind of regardless of what people were saying about it, because I'd been waiting for it for so long that I really want to see how I'm going to feel about it. But it is just gravy that people seem to really love it. And I think it's really cool that it seems like the industry at large was also very much paying attention to this. Like, the fact that it's gotten some mainstream coverage at Embargo is really cool, because that doesn't happen all the time for indie games. Like, I was excited for Neon White for a long time, but that doesn't mean that you're gonna see, you know, a lot of times you don't always see a lot of reviews pop for a game like this. But I think it's been, you know, marketed really well. I feel like it has a cool pitch, you know, it has like the recognition of Esposito having done like other projects and stuff.
I think it has that good combination of being shown off really well. Like, it's been at Nintendo indie stuff, and I think other showcases in the past. And then yeah, you have the pedigree of Ben, who's worked on Donut County, and this being such a left turn from what he's done before. It seems like Ben as a developer has a lot of versatility in terms of the ideas that come to mind, the stuff that he wants to tackle. And this game is only like half like first person quick platforming levels. The other half is literally visual novel and dating other characters. It's that kind of game, which I was not expecting. I was expecting for it to be fully, all right, get into the levels, go through, do the card combat, all this stuff, have fun. And once you get into the story bits, that's the stuff that I think has pulled me in the least. But it's stuff that still, I have fun with it. You know, like, it's not a story that seems like it's going for too much in terms of, you know, have like, in terms of like characters having a lot of depth and like the story going like really crazy places. I've not gotten any of that stuff out of it yet, but it is pretty quirky in terms of like the fun visual novel, flirty stuff that's going on between characters. It is very like boyfriend dungeon, like that type of dating sim, in that essence. But it takes place in a really cool, really cool environment, really cool setting, because you're literally in hell. So you're talking to other characters that you've had a past with, but you can't really remember the past. It's really interesting.
I also love people's takes on hell, and this is one that is definitely like looks different than what you normally see. So yeah, like I'm very down for this game. I'm saving it for a stream on Friday when I do like my best of 2022 watch. I'll probably do this. Maybe I'll toss TMNT in there, even though I don't think I have anyone to play with for that. So it'll just be me poorly punching things. But you know, those are probably like the two that I focus on. And yeah, I'm excited. I'm a little bit nervous because I have it on Switch, which isn't the most powerful place to have anything. But I think people have said that it runs well on there.
Yeah, so. Game Informer's review, they said that they played it on Switch and they gave it a 9.5 and really had the most glowing things to say about it. So that's it seems like on Switch it'll be pretty good. Yeah. And I do want to give a shout out to the card combat portion of it, because that was the thing that had me the most nervous, yet almost had me excited. Like seeing the trailer when they introduced that stuff, I was like, oh, this looks weird, but I'm kind of digging it. But card combat, it usually doesn't get me in. Playing it in the game, they simplify it so much. And I think the system is so smart, because like they said in one of the reviews, you are finding cards in the level and you equip a max of 2 cards at a time. You can't have any more than 2. And the way it goes, right, is like you pick up card. Any card is like a weapon. So you might pick up an SMG or you pick up a pistol. And if you pick up the pistol, that is the elevate pistol. And so if you discard the pistol, you then do a jump, right? Or if you get the SMG, you might do like a dash called Godspeed or whatever. And most of the time you're doing those abilities as opposed to like looking around shooting. And the ways that the orders in which they give you the card, they're giving you the cards in a specific way that like they know how they want the level to be played. And as the player, you're going to understand pretty quickly how they want you to play the level. And so it is, I'm going to run into Godspeed. As soon as I see an enemy, click RB to use it. That enemy, killing that enemy is going to give me an elevate card. That is then going to take me to the next thing. Like, there's a specific flow, like a puzzle that you're trying to figure out with each level that is pretty easy to grasp that I've been having a lot of fun with. A lot of it is just the execution of it that you're trying to figure out as a player. And it's been such a blast playing it. And so Neon White is easily one that I highly recommend. And I'm looking forward to like talking to Roger, talking to you, talking to Andy Cortez, because I'm sure this might be an Andy Cortez joint too, more about it. For now, though, before we get into the next news story, let me tell you about patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where you can go and get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, let us tell you about our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by Athletic Greens. I've been using AG1 the last few months because I figured it was well past time I start thinking about vitamins, but I'm usually not the biggest fan of their format. So being able to drink a flavored water is much more up my alley. And I'm a huge fan here of the fact that it doesn't taste super healthy. It kind of has like this mild tropical taste to it that I look forward to every morning. With one delicious scoop of AG1, you're absorbing 75 high quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. It's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop in a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/kindoffunny. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/kindoffunny to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. athleticgreens.com/kindoffunny. This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Shopify gives entrepreneurs the resources once reserved only for big businesses to everyone. So upstarts, startups, established businesses, content creators alike can sell everywhere, synchronize online and in-person sales, and effortlessly stay informed. I love how Shopify has the tools and resources that make it easy for any business to succeed, from down the street to across the globe. Our content creator friends use Shopify to manage all their merch sales and stuff. And I recently got Gia a pair of Allbirds from the Allbirds website, which also uses Shopify. So that's an example of big websites using Shopify for their sales. You can gain insights as you grow with detailed reporting on conversion rates, profit margins, and to help you supercharge your knowledge of your sales and your success. You can go to shopify.com/kfgames, all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial, and you can get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Grow your business with Shopify Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/KF Games right now. That's shopify.com/KF Games for a free 14-day trial. Shopify.com/KF Games.
Story number four, Stalker 2 is now coming in 2023, and the devs have released a vlog talking about what it's like working out of Ukraine. This is from Michael McWhorter at Polygon. And Barrett, I also have the video linked in the doc if you want to bring it up in the background. You don't need to because it...
I'd rather not. What I'm going to do, chat, is I'll put the link into the chat, and I'll also put it into the description. Like, they even warn at the very top, like, hey, there's going to be some disturbing stuff in here, just kind of detailing of, like, being very realistic of, like, what it's like to be a game developer in Ukraine.
It is a video I would recommend everybody check out, though. Like, it is for me, it was one that I checked out this morning, and I legit teared up while watching it. It's, like, it's really real and really useful to understand what it's like right now in Ukraine, especially trying to do your normal job and live a normal life while being in Ukraine. Like, it's a very valuable video. But to hop into Michael's article at Polygon, developer GSC GameWorld offered an update on Stalker 2, Heart of Chernobyl, during Microsoft's Xbox Extended Game Showcase on Tuesday, confirming that the horror simulation FPS is now expected sometime in 2023. Stalker 2 was previously slated for release in December 2022, but the ongoing war in Ukraine has impacted the game's development. As noted in a new development diary from GSC GameWorld, some of the studio's employees have decided to take up arms and defend their country, while a portion of Stalker 2's development continues in Kyiv. Others are working at a recently established office in Prague, quote, where much of the game's development will take place, end quote. That dev diary shows the destruction of Kyiv near GSC GameWorld's offices. Developers who are forced to work in cramped and potentially dangerous conditions, and those who are fighting Russian forces as part of the armed forces of Ukraine. Again, it's a video I recommend everybody go check out, but also, like, you know, Stalker, in terms of Stalker 2 being delayed, good. Also, I don't even feel like that game needs to come out in 2023. That's a game where I'm like, dude, bring it out in 2028. Take your time with it. That's, like, the least important thing right now going on for y'all over there at GSC GameWorld.
Yeah, but I think, you know, I mention all the time, like, it's really important to have an awareness of the ways that games don't exist in a vacuum and very much are affected by things happening in the real world, whether they're, you know, rights issues or, in this case, you know, like war and bombings. And yeah, that the dev diary is, I think, also just a very real look at what that experience is like. And yeah, it's been really rough for any studios coming out of the Ukraine. And it's been interesting getting to read their stories. And I'm glad that they're doing stuff like having like vlogs like this and that people are picking up those stories or like writing about those angles, because it's a unique circumstance. You know, hopefully this kind of thing doesn't become more commonplace. But yeah, it's a very real issue and definitely affecting development. So yeah, personally, I actually am looking forward to Stalker 2. That's a game that I feel like when I, even though, again, Order, like, don't reference me on the order in which things came out, but as someone that liked Metro Exodus, seeing Stalker 2, I'm like, I feel like that might scratch that itch for me. So I definitely am excited to, you know, get my hands on it when they are able to put it out. But yeah, you know, I'm glad they're staying safe and doing what it takes to get this game made while also being aware that part of that does involve, you know, delaying it. So I think that's important as well. But yeah, you know, looking forward to when they're able to get it out. And it was really cool for them to even, I think, also have that transparency and that vulnerability to put together something like that is really powerful. And I'm glad they like put it out there into the world for people to see and talk about.
100%. Story number five, we got new Gran Turismo movie details. This comes from Justin Kroll and Patrick Hypes at Deadline. Sony has set an August 11th, 2023 release date for Gran Turismo, the video game adaptation from director Neil Blomkamp and Columbia Pictures. Jason Hall wrote the screenplay, and PlayStation Productions' Asad Kizilbash and Carter Swan serve as producers alongside Doug Belgrad and Dana Brunetti. Here is the updated logline. Based on a true story, the film is the ultimate wish fulfillment tale of a teenage Gran Turismo player whose gaming skills won a series of Nissan competitions to become an actual professional race car driver. Janet, are you excited for this Gran Turismo movie? Does that plotline do it for you?
No, I'm not excited for the movie. I don't like in general, you know, game movies, I'm still very apprehensive about. But I did just get AMC A-list again. So I might just fuck around and watch anything. You know, it doesn't cost me nothing. I'm already paying for it. So I don't know. I could see a world where I see this, especially because my brother is really big into like the racing scene. Like he watches like I don't even know what he watches, but he like watches like competitive racing and stuff, and he like loves driving games. So I could see a world where I end up seeing this. Like, why not? Like, let's just check it out. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think the fact that it's based on a true story, like there could be some, you know, intrigue there, I think. I don't know. I guess I'm actually, now I'm looking at it more, like, I think, yeah, I think this could be cool. I mean, I think I've seen stuff that has that sort of angle be interesting and successful. So yeah, I mean, it doesn't sound like ridiculous, right? Or anything like that.
That's the thing is, like, I read through the plot line. I'm like, all right, that sounds like a movie. That sounds like something that could work in theaters. It's not something that excites me necessarily, but I'm not mad at it at all.
I wonder too, I guess my big question with this, because when I first like was slowly getting the details on it, I was like at first I was like, oh, that sounds weird. Then I'm like, oh, well, it's based on a true story, so I don't think it'll be like that crazy, even though, hey, like, truth is stranger than fiction, I guess, so maybe it will get that crazy. But I'm curious as to how much they're going to lean into the like beating over your head that like it's Gran Turismo, the video game, that kind of, you know, created or like led into this professional career that was developed by this player who like then became a professional driver. Just because I'm curious as to how much will them wanting to remind you that like, hey, Gran Turismo is a video game that's cool that you should buy, may impede the storytelling of the actual like true story. You know what I mean? Like, it's gonna be more of a, oh yeah, like this could have, if I didn't know Gran Turismo the game, I would just see this as an interesting movie of someone playing a game and then becoming,
you would hope,
a professional driver. You know, or is it like, how much is that gonna influence the way they tell the story, and will that make for a worse story being told? I guess is my only kind of concern hearing this pitch. But the general idea, like the general story, sounds intriguing. Like, I like adaptations of real life stuff sort of dramatized. I think that can be really cool sometimes, but I don't know that this will, you know, land.
Give me a good actor playing the main role, and I think you got me, right? Like, give me a Tom Holland. Just put Tom Holland in another one of these things. Okay. Put him in all the Sony movies.
Also, I did. I like how you Tom like, Holland. I, Sony
and I don't
want to
like. I don't want to like.
What you got against Tom Holland, Barrett?
I have nothing against Tom Holland. He's my favorite Spider-Man. But like, I like the way you presented. Like, give me a really good actor. Like, he's like an Oscar fucking nominated actor or something.
No, I don't. That's not what I meant. I just meant give me a good actor that I care about. I like Tom Holland and shit. You know, him playing a kid
know,
that's
he,
like,
you know, people are coming
really
in the chat. When he says, I don't feel so good, you telling me that didn't hit for you?
That's the thing. Great. That was awful worthy.
Okay, but here's the thing. I don't see Tom Holland as like a gamer, you know, like, because this has got to be like a gamer looking kid. That's literally the description of the fucking game. Based on a true story, the film is the ultimate wish fulfillment tale.
What are you trying to say about gamers?
What Gran Turismo does a gamer player look whose like? Gaming skills won a series of Nissan competitions to become an actual professional race car driver.
Barrett,
yeah.
don't sit here and act
as a nerdy fucking gamer.
Don't sit here and act like we don't have friends that are gamers that are hot. Like, we got fucking Rahul Kohli as like one of the hottest people in the world.
He's a gamer. I get it. But when you invoke the
Barrett
word
wants
gamer,
Michael Cera to be the driver.
I'm thinking of someone who does not look like Tom Holland. All right, give me the kid who played Riddler. You know, like,
here's
the
thing. He actually played games in real life too. I mean,
can we find who this story is based off of and find their picture? Because I bet you they're hot. They're a race car driver. Okay, right? Aren't race car drivers usually hot?
I'm not gonna say that they're necessarily hot, but I think a like. When I think of the gamers I know, they all look different. Except for the one thing I will say is, when you're like in media, some of y'all, they might, you know, the style and the dress might be kind of the same.
Okay, I don't think it, I don't. Here's an update for you.
I'm scared.
Here's an update for you because, like, definitely Tom Holland should not be cast as this. I get it; it's based off of, but like, if they want to be a little more,
is this
like,
are you about to pull up a black man?
Yes.
Bib, cast me. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Get me in there. Let me do it. I'm down to play this role.
Yeah, no, in that case, give me like a Michael B. Jordan. Like anything. Like, I get kind of what you. I get that there's a picture.
Also, that was a good looking man, by the way.
I ate my words on that too, but yeah.
I mean, yeah, like, that was such. Yeah, like, not
people in chat are saying Justice
like,
Smith.
At the end of this podcast.
People are saying Justice Smith. I think Justice Smith would knock that out.
That'd be fun.
That's what I'm saying is, like, if the only thing missing from the marketing so far of this movie is, like, and he's played by Justice like that. I think that'll be the thing that starts to convince people about this movie.
Yeah, now that I hear
played by Justice Smith from the hit movies Jurassic World Dominion,
from the hit movie Detective Pikachu, all right, and the hit game The Quarry.
The fact that the fact that it's based on a true story, I think makes me more down for it because that could be an interesting story to hear. And then the other thing too is like I do think that this can happen to people too, not literally to the professional pipeline because that's a very high level of execution, but I feel like, you know, I've definitely had stuff that I've done in a game that I wanted to do in real life that I did then do, or vice versa. Like I roller skate in real life and now I'm very interested in trying to roller skate more in games. Like my brother, like I said, he does a lot of he drives like as a regular put normal citizen, but he likes driving games a lot, and I could totally see him eventually doing.
I mean, like, think about how many people play Mario Maker or play Dreams and then get into game development via that, or like Little Big Planet, that type of thing. I know that's more like a direct analog because it's all in video games, but
for part of the like I had like a pre like best man hangout, because that was my brother's best man for his wedding, and I took him to I think it's called like F1 Speedway or something. It's like over here in either like Glendale or Burbank or something. There's a couple locations. There's a location, I think, in Burbank, in the LA area. And we like did the little racing with like the little cars. That shit was terrifying also to do. It was very stressful, but it was very fun. So I don't know. That's just my shot to like racing. Cause I watched like, what is it? I fucking watched Ford versus Ferrari once. And I was like, no, it's not go-karting. It's different because you're not supposed to be bumming into people. It's like, but it's like a little cart. Yeah. But it's not like as, I don't know, combative. But yeah, or maybe it is go-karting. I guess it would count as go-karting.
Yeah, I don't think you're supposed to be
It's not bumper carts, it's not bumper carts is what I meant to say. But yeah, go-karting. It's a little go-kart. It's fun. Anyway, this might be cool. I'll probably go watch it because I have A-list. Fuck it. Yeah, here's the thing.
Some people in chat are like, why don't you cast a new actor, right? I'd be fine with that. I think that would be less exciting. You know, I love seeing new actors get roles. But I think there's got to be something to bring people into the film.
To sell people on a movie.
On a Gran Turismo movie.
Yeah, you got to get name in there, you know?
Yeah, a Gran Turismo movie I don't think sells itself. Whereas a Gran Turismo movie starring XYZ person, I think starts to sell itself. And give that a dope-ass trailer, then I think you got a movie.
It's like the entire cast for the, why am I blanking on it? The TV show that you're really excited about that can't fail.
High School Musical, the musical, the series?
No, with Sweet Tooth.
Oh, Twisted Metal.
Yeah, Twisted Metal. You know, you got like that cast right there. That's selling that show right there.
Yeah. That's my thing is I think new actor, High School Musical, the musical, the series is a good example of a show that I think the title of the show does sell itself. And then you get in there and it's like, wow, look at all these awesome actors. Olivia Rodrigo is a star now. Like a lot of those folks are stars now because of that show. Like that's when you get new actors in.
I think Grand Turismo thing, angle, I don't know. I think if anything, this angle works because, like, well, again, it depends on how they're gonna couch it. Because I'm sure they want people to know, like, Gran Turismo the video game is real. You should buy it, you know. But people who don't know Gran Turismo the game, you don't need to know the game to like know the movie, because the movie is based on a real life thing about like someone playing a game and then becoming a professional driver. Like, you don't need to care about the driving in Gran Turismo to find that it'd be an entertaining story. While like. In Uncharted, that can still apply as well, but like it is literally trying to replicate elements of that game in the thing. Like, this isn't necessarily going to be it's not, you know what I mean? Like, it's more about like the real life like progression. So I think if anything, like, this is probably one of this is a better idea than I thought that they were going to have.
100%
having Gran Turismo 1,000%. Movie. Like, this sounds cool.
When they said
like,
a Gran Turismo movie, I was
like,
all
down
right.
for this movie.
I'm right there
I'll
with you.
I'll see you in theaters next to the Batman statue.
Well, let's round out the Roper Report story number 6. 10 years later, Lollipop Chainsaw seems to be making a return. This is Ryan Dinsdale at IGN. Lollipop Chainsaw is seemingly making a return following an announcement on Twitter from the game's executive producer. As spotted by Silicon Era, Yoshimi Yasuda said simply, quote, Lollipop Chainsaw is back by Dragami Games. Please look forward to it, end quote. The veteran developer was previously CEO of Kadokawa Games, who published the original in 2012, but left to start Dragami Games in May 2022. Yasuda didn't share further details on the nature of the game, whether it's a sequel, remake, remaster, reimagining, or anything else, but it would be the first chance for players to try the franchise in more than a decade. The original doesn't exist outside of the Xbox 360 and the PlayStation 3 hardware, as it lacks a PC version and isn't available through any form of backwards compatibility. Lollipop Chainsaw is a hack and slash action game in which high school cheerleader Juliet Starling must fight through hordes of zombies using the game's titular chainsaw and with her boyfriend's severed, still living head attached to her belt. They did it way before God of War. The game was a collaboration between No More Heroes, Suda51, that's right, I said it, and James Gunn, who'd go on to direct Guardians of the Galaxy and Suicide Squad. And here's the thing, I'm a big fan of Suda51. I never got around to playing Lollipop Chainsaw, and I know a lot of people say Lollipop Chainsaw is bad, and I believe them, but I still want to play this game. And so if they bring it to modern platforms, I will be playing some Lollipop Chainsaw.
Yeah, I mean, I'll hit this up. It's a little weird for a lot of reasons, I think. There's a lot of style, really specific camera angles here, and they're like, oh, this high school cheerleader. I'm like, this woman is like 25 years old, clearly, in the way she's animated and drawn. But yeah, I mean, like, why not, you know?
Why not?
Yeah,
especially
sure.
For a game that's especially for a game that's not gotten backwards compatibility. That's my biggest thing with it, right? It's one of those ones that hasn't given people an option to go back to, right, over the years. And I just want the option, because I think by now I probably would have played Lollipop Chainsaw if it was on any modern platform. But I'm not gonna bust out a PS3 or borrow somebody's 360 so I can go back and play it. Like, I'm not that antsy to play it. But you know, if I happen to get a remastered version or some kind of updated version where it does run a bit smoother, why not? Like, it's James Gunn, it's Suda51. That's cool. Even if the game's like, what, an IGN 5 out of 10? Oh, that still sounds like a fun thing to jump into.
I mean, hack and slash is interesting because you don't need a lot there necessarily for it to be enjoyable if you like that genre as well, which is why I think I'd be down to, like, give it a whirl.
Janet, I'm very excited to see when Lollipop Chainsaw actually comes out for PS5 and Xbox Series X, maybe the Switch. But that release is just so far away. If I want to know what's coming out to Mom and Grop shops today, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily show hosts each and every weekday.
Yeah. Out today, we got Dadish. For, 3
it's
like for PS4.
It's a radish who is a dad.
That's
Are you
awesome.
Serious?
Yes.
That is awesome.
I have like both the games on Switch. I've only played like a few minutes of them. Like, it's like, it's part of my low to high, like my impulse eShop spending. I'm very familiar with Dadish. So
I didn't know you're a big Dadish fan. Dadish 3 for PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. Later Daters Premium for Switch. Ollie Ollie World Void Riders DLC for PS5, PS4, Xbox Series X, Xbox One, and Switch, and PC. Thunder Kid 2 Null Mission for PS5, PS4, Xbox Series X, Xbox One, Switch. Ye Old Cribbage Club, a Later Daters game for Switch, which I guess is different from Later Daters Premium. Nemesis Distress for PC. And then Fire and Maneuver for PC. That's it for out today. We got a deal of the day. This is more so a PSA for me. Check out Steam Next Fest. Steam Next Fest is a week-long celebration featuring hundreds of free playable demos as well as developer live streams and chats presented by Steam. If you go to Steam right now, they have a whole page dedicated to Next Fest, and there are so many demos. Last night, I decided to check out quite a few of those demos, and let me tell you, some of these are awesome. Like, I started playing this game called Agent 64, which is basically just a GoldenEye 64 or Perfect Dark successor type game, and it plays exactly like those games, and it's a really fun time. There's also a game called, what was it called? It was like a rhythm game that I posted on Twitter. You can check out my Twitter because I tweeted about quite a few of them.
Metal Hellsinger.
Not Metal Hellsinger. It started with an M. Melatonin is a really cool rhythm game, really cool art style. Art style reminds me of like Adult Swim type shit, but it's like a rhythm heaven type game where it's like random ass levels for like different songs. We are literally clicking one to three buttons to try to do the things on beat. Really fun, really cool. And there's a whole lot of demos for you to check out there. So go check out Steam Next Fest. Now it's time for kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. That's where you go. Write in. Let us know what we got wrong as we got it wrong so we can correct it for those watching later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and on podcast services around the globe. It looks like SCB writes in and says there's breaking news. This is via Tom Henderson, who says the PS5 Pro controller is in development. It seems like a report. We're gonna put it in that take with a grain of salt area, but I can believe it. That sounds really cool. But take that with a grain of salt. And that's it for kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. Tomorrow's hosts for the show are Greg and Russ Frushtick. If you're watching this live on Twitch right now, after this is Mike and Andy hanging out in the Saints Row character creator. If you want to catch that stream later, you can subscribe to youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays. Remember this, has been Kind of Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, we run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, so stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, Game Daily.